Chapter 24. I can't quite tell you here in the street, he went on with a gloomy tongue. And you had better not come to my lodgings. Let us go in here. The building by which they stood was the market house. It was the only place available, and they entered, the market being over, and the stalls and areas empty. He would have preferred a more congenial spot, but, as usually happens, in place of a romantic field, or solemn aisle for his tale, it was told while they walked up and down over a floor littered with rotten cabbage leaves, and amid all the usual squalors of decayed vegetable matter and unsaleable refuse. He began and finished his brief narrative, which merely led up to the information that he had married a wife some years earlier, and that his wife was living still. Almost before her countenance had time to change, she hurried out the words, "Why didn't you tell me before?" "I couldn't. It seemed so cruel to tell it to yourself, Jude. So it was better to be cruel to me." "No, dear darling," cried Jude passionately. He tried to take her hand, but she withdrew it. Their old relations of confidence seemed suddenly to have ended, and the antagonisms of sex to sex were left without any counterpoising predilections. She was his comrade, friend, unconscious sweetheart no longer, and her eyes regarded him in estranged silence. "I was ashamed of the episode in my life which brought about the marriage," he continued. "Can't explain it precisely now. I could have done it, if you had taken it differently." "But how can I?" she burst out. "Here I have been saying, or writing, that you might love me, or something of the sort. Just out of charity and all the time, oh, it is perfectly damnable how things are," she said, stamping her foot in a nervous quiver. "You take me wrong, Sue. I never thought you cared for me at all, till quite lately, so I felt it did not matter. Do you care for me, Sue? You know how I mean? I don't like out of charity at all." It was a question which in the circumstances Sue did not choose to answer. "I suppose your wife is a very pretty woman, even if she's wicked?" she asked quickly. "She's pretty enough, as far as that goes. Prettier than I am, no doubt. You are not the least alike. And I have never seen her for years, but she's sure to come back, they always do." "How strange of you to stay apart from her like this," said Sue, her trembling lip and lumpy throat belying her irony. "You, such a religious man. How will the demigods in your pantheon, I mean those legendary persons you call saints, intercede for you after this? Now if I had done such a thing it would have been different, and not remarkable, for I at least don't regard marriage as a sacrament. Your theories are not so advanced as your practice. Sue, you are terribly cutting when you like to be a perfect vulture. But you must treat me as you will." When she saw how wretched he was, she softened, and trying to blink away her sympathetic tears, said with all the winning reproachfulness of a heart-hurt woman, "H, you should have told me before you gave me that idea, that you wanted to be allowed to love me. I had no feeling before that moment at the railway station, except for once Sue was as miserable as he, in her attempts to keep herself free from emotion, and her less than half success." "Don't cry, dear," he implored. "I am not crying, because I meant to love you, but because of your want of confidence." They were quite screened from the market square without, and he could not help putting out his arm towards her waist. His momentary desire was the means of her rallying. "Oh, no," she said, drawing back stringently, and wiping her eyes. "Of course not. It would be hypocrisy to pretend that it would be meant as from my cousin, and it can't be in any other way." They moved on a dozen paces, and she showed herself recovered. It was distracting to Jude, and his heart would have ached less had she appeared anyhow but as she did appear, essentially large-minded and generous on reflection, despite a previous exercise of those narrow womanly humors on impulse that were necessary to give her sex. "I don't blame you for what you couldn't help," she said, smiling. "How should I be so foolish? I do blame you a little bit for not telling me before. But after all, it doesn't matter. We should have had to keep apart, you see, even if this had not been in your life. No, we shouldn't, Sue. This is the only obstacle. You forget that I must have loved you and wanted to be your wife, even if there had been no obstacle, said Sue, with a gentle seriousness which did not reveal her mind. And then we are cousins, and it is bad for cousins to marry. And I am engaged to somebody else. As to our going on together as we were going, in a sort of friendly way, the people round us would have made it unable to continue. Their views of the relations of man and woman are limited, as is proved by their expelling me from the school. Their philosophy only recognizes relations based on animal desire. The wide field of strong attachment where desire plays, at least, only a secondary part, is ignored by them. The part of who is it? Venus Urania. Her being able to talk learnedly showed that she was mistress of herself again. And before they parted as he had almost regained her vivacious glance, her reciprocity of tone, her gay manner, and her second thought attitude of critical largeness towards others of her age and sex. He could speak more freely now. Here were several reasons against my telling you rashly. One was what I have said. Another, that it was always impressed upon me that I ought not to marry, that I belonged to an odd and peculiar family, the wrong breed for marriage. Ah, who used to say that to you? My great aunt. She said it always ended badly with us Follies. That's strange. My father used to say the same to me. They stood possessed by the same thought, ugly enough, even as an assumption. That a union between them, had such been possible, would have meant a terrible intensification of unfitness, two bitters in one dish. Oh, but there can't be anything in it. She said with nervous lightness. Our family have been unlucky of late years in choosing mates, that's all. And then they pretended to persuade themselves that all that had happened was of no consequence, and that they could still be cousins and friends and warm correspondents, and have happy genial times when they met, even if they met less frequently than before. Their parting was in good friendship, and yet Jude's last look into her eyes was tinged with inquiry, for he felt that he did not even now quite know her mind. Via tidings from Sue a day or two after passed across Jude like a withering blast. Before reading the letter he was led to suspect that its contents were of a somewhat serious kind, by catching sight of the signature which was in her full name, never used in her correspondence with him since her first note. My dear Jude, I have something to tell you which perhaps you will not be surprised to hear, though certainly it may strike you as being accelerated, as the railway companies say of their trains. Mr. Phillotson and I are to be married quite soon in 3 or 4 weeks. We had intended, as you know, to wait till I had gone through my course of training, and obtained my certificate, so as to assist him, if necessary, in the teaching. But he generously says he does not see any object in waiting, now I am not at the training school. It is so good of him, because the awkwardness of my situation has really come about by my fault in getting expelled. Wish me joy. Remember I say you are to, and you mustn't refuse. Your affectionate cousin, Susanna Florence Mary Brighthead. Jude staggered under the news, could eat no breakfast, and kept on drinking tea because his mouth was so dry. Then presently he went back to his work and laughed the usual bitter laugh of a man so confronted. Everything seemed turning to satire. And yet, what could the poor girl do, he asked himself, and felt worse than shedding tears. Oh, Susanna Florence Mary, he said as he worked. Who don't know what marriage means? Could it be possible that his announcement of his own marriage had pricked her onto this, just as his visit to her, when in liquor, may have pricked her onto her engagement? To be sure, there seemed to exist these other and sufficient reasons, practical and social, for her decision. But Sue was not a very practical or calculating person. And he was compelled to think that a pique at having his secret sprung upon her had moved her to give way to Phillotson's probable representations, that the best course, To prove how unfounded were the suspicions of the school authorities would be, to marry him offhand, as in fulfillment of an ordinary engagement. Sue had, in fact, been placed in an awkward corner. Poor Sue. He determined to play the Spartan, to make the best of it, and support her, but he could not write the requested good wishes for a day or two. Meanwhile, there came another note from his impatient little dear. Jude, will you give me away? I have nobody else who could do it so conveniently as you, being the only married relation I have here on the spot, even if my father were friendly enough to be willing, which he isn't. I hope you won't think it a trouble. I have been looking at the marriage service in the prayer book, and it seems to me very humiliating that a giver away should be required at all. According to the ceremony as there printed, my bridegroom chooses me of his own will and pleasure, but I don't choose him. Somebody gives me to him, like a she-ass or she-goat, or any other domestic animal. Bless your exalted views of woman, O churchman. But I forget. I am no longer privileged to tease you. Ever, Susanna Florence Mary Brighthead. Jude screwed himself up to heroic key, and replied, My dear Sue, of course I wish you joy. And also of course I will give you away. What I suggest is that, as you have no house of your own, you do not marry from your school friends, but from mine. It would be more proper, I think, since I am, as you say, the person nearest related to you in this part of the world. I don't see why you sign your letter in such a new, and terribly formal way. Surely you care a bit about me still. Ever your affectionate, Jude. What had jarred on him even more than the signature was a little sting he had been silent on the phrase "married relation." What an idiot it made him seem as her lover. If Sue had written that in satire, he could hardly forgive her. If in suffering, ah, that was another thing. His offer of his lodging must have commended itself to Phillotson at any rate, for the schoolmaster sent him a line of warm thanks, accepting the convenience. Sue also thanked him. Jude immediately moved into more commodious quarters, as much to escape the espionage of the suspicious landlady who had been one cause of Sue's unpleasant experience as for the sake of room. Then Sue wrote to tell him the day fixed for the wedding, and Jude decided, after inquiry, that she should come into residence on the following Saturday, which would allow of a 10-day stay in the city prior to the ceremony, sufficiently representing a nominal residence of 15. She arrived by the 10 o'clock train on the day aforesaid, Jude not going to meet her at the station, by her special request, that he should not lose a morning's work and pay, she said, if this were her true reason. But so well by this time did he know Sue, that the remembrance of their mutual sensitiveness at emotional crises might, he thought, have weighed with her in this. When he came home to dinner as he had taken possession of her apartment, she lived in the same house with him, but on a different floor, and they saw each other little, an occasional supper being the only meal they took together, when Sue's manner was something like that of a scared child. What she felt he did not know. Their conversation was mechanical, though she did not look pale or ill. Phillotson came frequently, but mostly when Jude was absent. On the morning of the wedding, when Jude had given himself a holiday, Sue and her cousin had breakfast together for the first and last time during this curious interval, in his room, the parlor which he had hired for the period of Sue's residence. Seeing, as women do, how helpless he was in making the place comfortable, she bustled about. "What's the matter, Jude?" she said suddenly. He was leaning with his elbows on the table, and his chin on his hands, looking into a futurity which seemed to be sketched out on the tablecloth. Oh, nothing. You are father, you know. That's what they call the man who gives you away. Jude could have said, Hillitson's age entitles him to be called that. But he would not annoy her by such a cheap retort. She talked incessantly, as if she dreaded his indulgence in reflection, and before the meal was over both he and she wished they had not put such confidence in their new view of things, and had taken breakfast apart. What oppressed Jude was the thought that, having done a wrong thing of this sort himself, he was aiding and abetting the woman he loved in doing the like wrong thing, instead of imploring and warning her against it. It was on his tongue to say, "You have quite made up your mind?" After breakfast they went out on an errand together, moved by a mutual thought that it was the last opportunity they... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.